Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 58 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, and joined by our co-host, Steve, and we're going to cover this week's nerd topics. And starting with entertainment, we've got a little talk around some of the MCU stuff with Hawkeye getting delayed, Doctor Strange director falling out, and then we're going to move into tech, which dominates this week with CES. First, we've got some space flight with Virgin Galactic, then our CES wrap-up, some of the new tech, innovative tech coming out of CES that impressed us. And then some little stories following up to a story that we had on hackers getting into Ring cameras and several others. So stick around. Let's get to it.
Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, we're back with episode 58 of the Nerd Cantina Show, and I know we talked last week about Golden Globes and all that stuff, and one movie that you were upset you hadn't been able to see yet was The Best Picture of 1917, and you just saw it. Quick thoughts.
First off, great movie. Absolutely phenomenal movie. I didn't even do a YouTube review for it because I did not want to stumble my thoughts on it in a on-the-fly kind of YouTube critique. It actually got me home and inspired me to actually write a review again. So that one's up on the blog. But I will say, because it beat out Joker, and that was what I said last week was going to, you know, pique my expectations. My expectations were high. It met all my expectations. But I still don't believe it should have beat out Joker. Only for the simple aspect of, I want to say Joker was more artistic. You know, the cinematography in 1917 was phenomenal. The story they told was phenomenal. It was emotional. You really got like sucked into this movie. It wasn't like a Saving Private Ryan or anything like that, where it's a lot of war and you get sucked into the war. You really just get attached to these two guys. But Joker was very artistic, you know what I mean? And I think that's what pushes Joker a neck ahead of the finish line for the awards. So I don't know if it was because Golden Globes is what, Hollywood Foreign Press, so it's a lot of foreigners, so they gave it to the Brits. Fuck the old Yankees. But once it comes back to the Oscars and maybe the Screen Actors Guild and things like that, yeah, I see Joker should win. I mean, you never know with these things.
Yeah, I was going to say, you never know. And didn't 1917 have like a very unique, you know, I haven't seen it, but the film style and the way it was tracked and filmed, wasn't that
completely? Yeah, no, like I said, the cinematography, the shots were excellent. You know, you never lose focus of the characters, and they do a really good job of making the war like this extravagant background, you know, so it the war never really takes center stage, you know, to whereas with a lot of war movies you don't notice your characters anymore. You're more engulfed in like, damn it, you just lost an arm, or you know, all yeah. the bullets whizzing by and the really choppy shots and things like that. Never is there a scene in that movie like that. You are honed in on these main characters, but at the same time, they are going through one of the most horrific wars in human history, and that is right there behind them, you know. But at no point do you stop caring about this character and care more about what's going on in the event, you know, the scene of the time, you know, with the background. So just to be able to do that, I think is very challenging. It's very, you know, the Mendez, he succeeded in every part of it, you know, and that had to have been really carefully thought out. And, you know, so I don't want to take anything away from 1917, but I don't know, to me, Joker just, you know, we just released to the public our Patreon exclusive Joker review. And, you know, a lot of the points that we talked about in that movie were very nuanced, were very, you know, had to do a lot with symbolism and things like that. And I don't think there was as much of that in 1917. So that's what for me pushes Joker over the edge.
Yeah, 1917 is definitely one I want to see. And yeah, just Steve mentioned it real fast, but if go to the nerdcantina.com, you can find the Joker review. The week after we saw Joker, we did a Patreon exclusive, just full deep dive review into our thoughts on the movie and really why we loved it. And it was still pretty raw in our analysis of the movie at the time. But that's now we've made that available for everybody to go along with the Blu-ray release. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, just urge you to go and take a listen as you refresh, watch the Blu-ray. And if you've recently seen the movie, kind of get our thoughts there. But, you know, this week or actually yesterday, we get the Oscar nominations and no real significant surprises there coming out of Golden Globes. It kind of mirrors most of what we've already seen in this award season. So I think, award season is in full swing. We'll see how 1917 holds up against Joker's Best Picture and some of these other Best Actor nods and everything else.
Yeah, especially with the Oscars not having the segmented categories as the Golden Globes did, Golden Globes did. You know, you're going to have the musicals and comedies mixed in with the dramas. You know, and we got a lot of good dramas this year. Yeah. You know, so I don't see Rocket Man holding up too much. Hustlers, a lot of people are talking, got snubbed, and it's like, man, I wrote a really good review for Hustlers. I did really like it. I thought it was a really good, well done movie. But I mean, it's like, come on, you're going up against one of Tarantino's greatest works. You're going up against, you know, Sam Mendes's is great work. You're going up against Joker. Like, come on, like, just let's not make this a social issue. Let's look at the quality of work and have an objective opinion on why these things didn't get nominated, why certain things did. Like let's hold our feels to the side and actually objectively look at the work.
Yeah. So I think we'll, you know, we're gonna end up talking pretty heavy on the Oscars as it comes to that point. Let's I guess can some of that talk.
Yeah, we got a few other entertainment headlines to get through, so let's move on by.
Within entertainment, MCU's got some news, both bad or at least kind of causing some questioning into the MCU's move into this. What are we at? Phase four now? So first you get the Hawkeye show, which has been announced that it has been delayed indefinitely.
So the word indefinitely is what scares me, I think. You know, it's not like, we just got to reshoot some stuff or we're trying to figure this out. We're going to pick back up shooting in a couple weeks. It's like, we just shut it down. We don't even know what we're going to do to get it back. Like, that's a little disturbing.
Yeah, they announced that it has nothing to do with Jeremy Renner's legal issues or anything.
Oh, of course. Why would it have anything to do with a headline topic of your main coast or of your main star? Like,
so they say it has absolutely nothing to do with that. And it's possibly true. Only since that, you know, they just moved up WandaVision, a pretty much a full year. They're having issues with Doctor Strange 2, which we'll speculate here in a second about. But I think maybe MCU is just reshaping, hey, what needs to come out before the next? And that's part of the problem with this like tightly linked MCU is, well, the Hawkeye show has to make sense with what they've got going on. So maybe it just had to get delayed for that.
Who knows how Spider-Man played into all this? You know, they have now contractual obligations that they have to meet with Sony to release X amount of Spider-Man movies on an X amount of, on a timeline, you know, so now that that's all hashed out and, you know, maybe they have to shuffle the cards a little bit, you know, so hopefully this doesn't have anything to do with production issues, writing issues, asshole actor issues.
Yeah. I'm hoping is the case is just that it really comes down to it's indefinite just because they're now reshaping what is sequencing before the next, like what shows need to come out, what movies what needs to happen in movies before the next show moves forward. Right. I think that makes sense to me. and hopefully is the case. Because yeah, if it's indefinite just because Jeremy Renner's off the rails, I don't know if you're getting that dude back anytime soon to where he's not in the public eye as some big asshole. So that could be an ever-going problem. But I briefly mentioned, you know, you got the Doctor Strange 2, the director Scott Derrickson, he drops out in what they're saying is amicable.
But still creative differences. Like, they did flat out say creative differences. So that means they weren't on the same page.
And he's remaining on as, you know, an executive producer. But that to me always sounds
contracts.
Like, yeah, you're not doing a damn thing. You're just still going to get some money from this.
Yep.
But we're not going to let you in any way really.
That's them wanting to fire him. Him saying, "Well, you fucking can't because we're under contract." Well, how about you just leave and we'll let you stay on producer, so you still get to make a shit ton of money, and you really don't have to do anything for it.
Yeah, and I think this one is more. It is more telling on. I think this is really just like every director has to come in humble enough to know that you're not the dude. Kevin Feige's the dude, right? Kevin Feige's the guy running this show. You're just there to point a camera, and you don't get to make creative choices on where these characters are going, what the outcomes are going to be. Your job is to stay in a very narrow rails that Kevin Feige has said that this movie will tell. And I think that's where Scott Derrickson's problem.
With Deadpool, like, you get these directors that come in and they want to put their vision of the character and this and that. And like, I have these ideas and this, you know, at some point, like some directors, you give that creative, you know, arm to and let them do what they want. Other times, just run the fucking show, pal. Like, we don't care about your ideas. We don't care about it. Just make sure the shots are clean. Make sure people are hitting their marks. Make sure everything is going according to plan and shut the fuck up and do your job. And there's a time for one and there's a time for the other. And the MCU is the time for the other. Just shut the fuck up and do your job.
Again, and MCU is even a unique, like, it's even more restricted than anybody else who's going to be out there directing. You've got a narrow place to be. And you started to, I guess, see some cracks in there. There's people, you know, go back then and now they're trying to analyze tweets and stuff from Scott Derrickson. Well, there's some out there that were absolutely damning. Like, just back in just about a month ago, December 15th, he tweeted something about how big movie release schedules are the enemy of, like, of art. And like, so it's just keeping the timeline that the MCU is holding him to was the enemy of his art.
Yeah, it sounds like he got on some Scorsese and he was trying to make a Marvel cinema. And like, we've already established, we ain't trying to be cinema, homie. We're trying to be the roller coaster of movies, you know. Just make sure you're tall enough, click yourself in, you know, raise your hands and go for the fucking ride. Just shut the fuck up.
Yeah. And yeah, he's been saying for a while that this Multiverse of Madness movie was going to be the first MCU horror movie, that he wanted it to be a true horror movie. And then Kevin Feige came out a week or two ago and said, "Nah, not really horror, guys. Like, it's not going to be horror. It's going to have some surprising moments. It's going to have some suspenseful,
you know, maybe a couple thrills."
And he's like, "But it's not going to be a horror movie." And what you know, you had a lot of Marvel people that were really amped up to have a horror movie. But the problem is when every movie links to one another, you can't just say, all right, this movie that's going to be incredibly important to the rest of the MCU, kids can't watch.
I was gonna say, you can't neglect your 8-year-old to 15-year-old audience in a billion-dollar franchise. Like,
so I think Kevin Feige really probably reined in that and said, like, no, this will be marketable to everybody, which means, no, you're not making a true horror movie that's going to make horror fans happy.
We're not giving the kid in his Spider-Man pajamas fucking nightmares, asshole. Like, calm your tits.
I see a bunch of articles and fans talking about, like, oh, well, who should be recast? And they're all like, oh, well, they should go out and get these, you know, classic horror directors. And it's like, who the fuck do you think is watching these movies? Like, this is going to be like movie 30 in the arc of MCU. You can't just in the middle. And Multiverse Madness is supposed to explain away a lot of what's going on with the multiverse and how you're going to probably bring in characters. You can't have something that's probably a linchpin to what's happening in the future not be accessible to a whole lot of people who just don't care about horror.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is I'm not a big fan of the horror genre. I mean, I'll watch them, not many of them, but I'll watch them. And yeah, I think by doing that, you take the risk of really not only alienating a large portion of your audience, but making it a flop, right? Yeah. If it doesn't hit well, if you don't do, you can't be half in the horror genre and half in the MCU. You either got to go balls out one or the other, right? If you try to play that gray area, you are putting it at a high risk for a Thor 2.
And one thing that I know that you'll thoroughly enjoy about this story is also Scott Derrickson, just before coming out of this, he tweeted out saying, "Thank you, Rian Johnson has been trending just 2 days ago after he took time out of his vacation to talk with me at length about a personal situation I'm dealing with. An astonishing good filmmaker, but also an incredibly gracious and incisive human being. Truly grateful for him." So Rian Johnson.
I saw that thank you, Rian Johnson was trending on Twitter, and I almost had a fucking brain aneurysm. I swear to God. I just started wanting to go off on this like 15 tweet thing. Hashtag thank you, Rian Johnson, for fucking up everyone's childhood. Hashtag thank you, Rian Johnson. Like, I wanted to just go off on a Twitter fucking tangent. I had to like throw my phone across the room and just be like, nope, nope, not doing it. Like, I'm not, you're not sucking me into this. Like, I'm not,
not
I'm not
today, internet.
Do it.
Not today, internet.
like half of Twitter tried to troll my life. And I was like, nah, man, nah, I'm not doing it. Cause I scrolled like eight of them of people like actually seriously like hashtag thank you, Rian Johnson,
for
reviving the Star Wars universe. And I'm like pulling my fucking hair out.
I know. And now. You also get Rian Johnson is somehow in some weird convoluted way also affecting your other beloved franchise of the MCU by advising Scott Derrickson in his moment of where he had to make a decision on his creative art fucking money and make a good movie. And he chose to walk away.
So to me, that just
away.
Makes the story that much better because Feige did what Kathleen Kennedy couldn't do.
Yeah, and rein in the egos of other people for the overall vision of the franchise. Right.
You know, so... Kevin Feige, you the motherfucking man. You are the motherfucking man. Kathleen Kennedy, jump off a fucking cliff.
And I think there is, you know, some... Kevin Feige's not completely infallible, and I think there are times that Kevin Feige's going to rein this stuff into where, you know, the movies don't mature.
He's earned a fucking mulligan, man. He's earned it.
And there's ways to improve these stories that are being told in MCU, and I'm sure a director with full control could... But that director is going to lose sight of this next five movies that Kevin Feige's already planned out. So I've got no issues with this. And if this guy couldn't stay within the rails, hey, I'm not mad at you for quitting on the movie.
Yeah, I hope your next movie is a success. Yeah. You know, I went and saw Knives Out with Rian Johnson. Fuck him. I didn't think it was a good movie either. You know, I think dude makes shit. I think he thinks he's a lot more artistic than he actually fucking is. The movie was way overthought and not executed greatly. But a lot of people liked it, and I'm sure Derrickson is kind of the same. You know, you give him some good properties, he might make a decent movie. I just don't fuck with this, you know, like don't take franchises that have the largest fan bases on the goddamn planet and say, I'm going to play with it my way, and I'm going to make, you know, yeah, no, just go away. I'm all for it.
All right. But either way, MCU had a tough week, essentially delaying one of their shows, losing a director, which is pretty late in stage because as Scott Derrickson has said, this movie's coming out on schedule. Like there are no production delays happening in the MCU. So some no-name director's probably going to come on because any big-name director's already in some level of project. So they're going to bring in somebody.
Hey,
they're going to get this back on schedule.
Joe Blow off the street. Hit a home run, putt. Make your career. Here's your chance. It's that backup quarterback that comes in and wins the playoff game, man. Like you can make your career.
Or flop terribly. But either way, it's coming out on time.
Yeah, is it a Nick Foles or a or a Brian Greasy?
All right. Well, last piece in entertainment talk was just because it's interesting to me, but Seth MacFarlane is now leaving Fox after being 21 years on Fox between Family Guy, Orville, all the other animated shows that he's been a part of. He's now leaving Fox, going to NBCU, getting ready probably for some peacock time. And he took $200 million from NBC to go over there, as NBC's going to continue to bolster their content.
I mean, good for him. You know, he's proven himself and he's got successful movies, successful TV shows, animated, live action. The guy has a great brain. You know, if Fox didn't want to pay him to stay, I don't blame him for going. I wonder how this affects his properties, because I am a big fan of the Orville. It hasn't come back yet. I haven't heard that it's canceled. I don't know what they're doing with it. Family Guy, South Park and Family Guy are just constantly waiting for Matt Groening to die, I think, so they could try to catch up to The Simpsons. So I don't know. I don't know how this goes into their plans. I'm hoping that his other properties kind of just stay with Fox and he's able to work with them. But anything new coming from the MacFarlane brain now goes to the NBC streaming service, probably.
Yeah, I think it's good. I don't see any reason for him to be particularly loyal to Fox.
Man, the minute your ratings dip, them fucking networks are going to cut you off. You know, like you it's the same thing like in sports, man. Don't have any loyalty to these teams, because the minute you ain't making them money, you're fucking out on the street. It's the same thing with these executive producers. The minute Family Guy or Orville takes any kind of market share dip, fuck your face. We're cutting ties. Yeah. So get your fucking money, man.
All right. Well, that'll take us through the end of our entertainment talk here. And moving into tech. Again, we got a bunch to cover with CES kind of being a big annual event here. But first, I want to talk space with the Virgin flight. So we've got Virgin flies their second commercial space tourism flight, or they flew it earlier in the year, and then they've now gotten to what they're calling weight on wheels on their second ship, which means that the whole structure of it is built, it's supporting itself. They just got to put more instruments and things on the inside, but it's about 80% complete for their second spaceship. And they're looking at having 5 total of these commercial spaceships by 2023. And these things are cool. It's already flown in. The first one has already flown into space twice now, and the second one's almost built. And they're looking at their first commercial service. They're still hoping for early 2021. I watched on, I want to say it was like one of like the financial shows on MSNBC or whatever. I was talking to the CEO, and he was saying, their ultimate goal is ideally by the end of this year, because Richard Branson is 71 years old. At least they put Richard Branson in space this year. They're trying to get him up there, which would be awesome. Like, that's an innovative guy who has always been forward leaning into tech and innovation, and he wants to get in space, get that dude in space before health turns for the worse.
Oh yeah. Branson's been a great entrepreneur for decades now. You know, everything that he's done with Virgin, has been pioneering. He's one of the good guys, right? And he was one of the first to kind of be the billionaires looking towards the stars. Before Elon and Bezos were doing it, Virgin was trying to get to space. Technology just wasn't, going, ramping as fast as it is now. So, yeah, I'd like to see this take off and be successful before he parts his ways from the company and the Earth.
Yeah, and then from there, after he gets that first flight, they'll start trying to do some commercial travel where they can do, the idea is that they can do point-to-point travel. So, take off from L.A., land in Dallas, whatever else, actually be able to commercially fly people, but just taking them up to space. So an hour and a half flight.
That would be the most cost efficient thing, right? Because you're going up into space, you have the rotation of the Earth, you're not going to come back in, re-entry in the same area that you took off in. So to land at the same airfield or same airbase, I'm thinking isn't as efficient as it would be to hit orbit in Cali and then re-enter in the East Coast and then okay, cool, you just took a really expensive flight to New York.
Well, let's be serious here. There's nothing about this is about efficiency. Like, they might as well just make it a one-day journey, just fly up to space, let the whole Earth circle around again, and then come back down to the same spot. It really makes no difference. But right now, they're looking at it's going to be $250,000 for a single ticket on a one-and-a-half-hour flight.
What's sad to me is that there's a shit ton of people that's like chump change, too.
So, well, they already have over 600 on the wait list, and they're not accepting anymore. So, you know, with only five...
I mean, exactly. There's 600 people with disposable income in the $250,000 range.
Yeah. And, you know, if I got to a point where, $250,000 was less than 1% of my net worth, I'm committing 1% to go into space.
Oh,
no
for sure.
problem. No oh, questions sure. asked. Don't,
if you got,
nobody
if you
judge
got it,
me for
it.
My...
If you got it, flaunt it. Like, go ahead, buddy. Go to space. You know, I'm sitting here cutting coupons, getting mad.
And I consider that charity at this point. It's charity to the human race. We've talked about in the past that, you know, the economics of space travel, of privatized space travel, requires space commercialization. Like, you have to be able to make money in space. Otherwise, man, you can't, nothing in this world is 100% altruistic.
Unless you're China.
No, I mean, even China, I mean, they're still going to make money with whatever they're doing. You know, when China's going to space, they're going to still find a way to mine asteroids, to mine precious metals from other planets, from the moon, from whatever. There still has to be an economical driver towards going to space. You know, even though Elon Musk wants to just extend our consciousness to the stars, the consciousness needs to be funded by economic principles. So, hey, you 600 people who are going to drop $250,000 for spaceflight, you're doing a service to the human race.
Well, yeah, it's
by
like
allowing
the, it's like
space
the people that
being.
Bought the first CD players for $4,000.
Yeah. I mean, you really took some massive scale thing and put it about the smallest level of insignificance
possible.
Man,
that's the theme of the show. We got to dumb this down a little bit so we all understand, you know? And I think anybody my age can remember the times where you walked in someone's house and they had a CD player and you were like, "Damn, what's that? It plays on mirrors? These little circle mirrors? Oh, hell no. I'm still making mixtapes." Let's just hope space travel doesn't go the way of Betamax.
Yeah. And I think you know, Virgin Mobile is a completely different design than like SpaceX or whatever else. SpaceX is talking about, hey, like actual getting out to the moon, getting out to Mars. And Virgin Mobile is really just trying to get to orbit and come back down. It's completely different business models. One isn't competing with the other, but I think the success of one will definitely drive the success of the other.
Yeah, so, it definitely is. It's a driver. Just keeping people's heads in the stars alone is a big thing, because, I mean, I want to say we hit a point where nobody really cared about space. We shut NASA down. We defunded NASA. There was a big time in the last decade where people stopped looking to the stars and giving a shit. And this has kind of revitalized that kind of sentiment that we should be, as humans, looking to expand into outer orbit, you know, as we burn this fucking planet.
go out to space to watch it burn. I think these things are awesome. So, really, really interested to see that. Maybe we'll go and visit eventually some far distant planets, like one that was just discovered by some 17-year-old.
Yeah, man, like, I don't... So I've read the story, and I still don't know how much of this is dumb luck.
Oh, you it's all dumb I mean? Luck. But, I mean... Hold on. It's dumb luck in the sense that he just happened to be the one...
It's dumb luck in the sense of hitting a hole-in-one is dumb luck. Like, yeah. I was trying to hit the golf ball in the hole. Everyone knows how difficult it is. If it goes in... Yes, there was some skill involved, but I don't give a shit if you're Tiger Woods. You hit a hole in one. There's still a lot of fucking luck played into that. Because if not, that motherfucker would do it all the goddamn time.
Yeah. And I mean, there's some luck in the sense that, like, yes, he just happened to be the one sitting on the sensor, able to see this thing that, you know, a lot of people would have discovered. But, man, There's no luck in the fact that this dude's 17 years old and he was on day three of his NASA internship at 17 years old. I wasn't doing a damn thing.
Way to peak, buddy. Way to peak. Like, life is all downhill from here, pal. Just like the rest of us, you can peak in high school, be a miserable son of a bitch for the rest of your life. I got football stories you can sit and tell your kids with a fat beer belly the time you discovered a planet, and no one will give a shit either.
Oh man, I hope he doesn't listen to this show. That's so honest and true. He is screwed. But I'm sure whatever, he'll get some scholarships based on this.
Yeah, good for this kid. You know, I hope he inspires a bunch of other young kids to take up, you know, space and look to this. Like, that's the thing is, like, you know, you hear these stories and then it kind of like oversimplifies it to you, like, oh shit. It's that easy to discover a planet. I want to discover a planet.
And it's so funny. I watched this kid on an interview with whatever New York-based show that Michael Strahan does, like the local show that he does. And I watched them interviewing this kid. And to see what, like, how little Michael Strahan and his co-hosts knew what the hell they were talking about to ask this kid. And then in the end, Michael Strahan, you know, tells him, like, he wants to thank him for coming on or whatever else. And as a thank you and to encourage him to continue, they gave him a gift card for a new telescope. And I was thinking, like, does Michael Strahan think that he found this fucking planet on like a Walmart level telescope and not some, you know, super $1 billion artificial intelligence driven, algorithm driven sensor network? Like, does he really think that, like, you just gave this dude a $500 telescope from REI and he's going to go ahead and find a new planet again?
Well, you ignorant motherfucker.
we all suck.
Yeah.
All right. let's move forward here. All right. Consumer Electronics Show. Big news coming out of CES. As there always is, some innovative stuff, some actual real stuff that you could go to the store and buy today. And, you know, it varies significantly, but there's a lot of coverage coming from it. We can just talk about some that really stood out to us.
We got a shiny new PlayStation logo.
Yeah, so
that I think we all seen coming. Like,
yeah, who didn't
know?
It's
like your grandpa trying to jump around the corner and scare you. It's like, oh, boo! Like, we all seen you there, grandpa. Don't. Like, oh, I'm so scared.
Yeah, the biggest announcement coming out of Sony, you know, they didn't bring a PS5, they didn't demonstrate a PS5 capability, they didn't do anything but show that they creatively used the same font that they've used for years to write PS5.
We can change the edge on an S to make it look like a 5. What?
Sony's biggest announcement was the Sony Vision S. Did you see the Vision S?
No,
I
didn't.
The Sony car? So Sony unveiled an electric vehicle that they made, that this thing had like 120 different sensors on it, cameras everywhere. There's no side mirrors. There's no rear view mirror. Everything is cameras. It's got 360 degree cameras and sensors, like completely face recognition when you sit in the car, that it recognizes who you are so it could set your seat to you. It also does it for the passenger seats as well.
That's dope.
This thing is completely decked out with tech, screens everywhere. Like, the whole thing is just full of screens for everybody, for, again, all of your mirrors. Everything else is different screen captures, automatically captures your drive, so that way you can, one, do like accidents, and then on your road trips you could do a cool montage of what you've driven through, I guess. In the end, like, everybody is saying that looked at it that this car's never going to be on the fucking road. Like, the only way you're ever driving this car is the fact that, like, it's going to be an unlockable thing in the next Forza.
Gran Turismo,
right? Yeah, Gran Turismo for Sony. But it's what it's showing is that Sony is putting a ton of effort into electric vehicle tech, that they're probably going to try to sell a lot of these sensors, a lot of this stuff, the different screens.
Yeah, they wanted patents. Right. It was a patent race.
Yeah, and a demonstration of concept, so that way they can sell it to Tesla or sell it to, you know, Tesla's already got all their own stuff pretty well in house, but now that every other automaker is trying to do e-vehicles and trying to get into the space, now Sony can say, well, we've already got the sensors for you. We're sitting here waiting for you to put wheels on them.
Speaking of cars that'll never make the road, did you see the Mercedes-Benz Avatar car?
I did. It sold like one, right?
And there's like you, no gear shifter. It's got like this hand palm thing. It senses your moods and changes like the flaps on the car to your heart rate. And like they literally want it to be like you plug your penis tail into the car and feel like you're totally immersed into this like experience. Like, why are you so extra, Mercedes? Like, why are you so extra?
I always love concept cars because they're just so ridiculous.
Oh man, you give me Gates and Buffett money. Yeah, it's at my house. It's at my house, and we all get drunk and we stand around it and we laugh, you know.
and we go crash this car because I can't fucking turn this thing. I can't turn this thing with feels.
Oh God, you know, just the fact that like we live in a day and age where people are starving and homeless, but we got people making cars like this. It's actually kind of sad. It's kind of fucking sad.
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Don't make this dark. All right, let's bring it happy again by talking about the fact that one of the big stories coming out of CES is the fact that sex tech was back.
Yeah. And
strong.
Bangable robots.
Yeah. lots of things that you can have sex with coming out of CES. A lot of displays.
I think it's last funny year, that they had to drop the ban, and they're just like, you know, they probably just get emails all year like, can we bring our robotic dildo? Can we? No? No? They're just like, fine. Bring your Bluetooth-enabled fleshlight. It's okay.
And it's not just that. Like, a lot of the tech that they have, you know, there's a lot of wearables. They seriously have a one, I can't remember the name of the company, but it was like a sex tech, and it was like a ring that they wear that has a like a little rod on it, but it's like a ring, and they just show like in their demos like women just wearing it in conversation talking to each other, but it's really just like a vibrating sex toy that's like, really, would you be wearing that around to like work? Like, is that something you'd be doing?
Because you know there's going to be a subsection of people that don't wash that thing properly.
just in case you have a quick 5-minute break somewhere, you're just wearing that thing.
I'm waiting for my Fitbit enabled cock ring so I can maximize performance. Like, yeah, I mean, this should have its own convention. Like, we really need to...
bullshit. This should...
Shut the fuck up. No, I want to bring my kid to check out the new PlayStation. I don't want to have to walk... I don't want to have to hide him from a section of the convention when you bring your kid in Spencer's. And you're like, don't look in the back. Don't look in the back of the store, kid. Like, you want a Rick and Morty shirt? Here's a Rick and Morty shirt. Just don't look behind. Don't look in the back of the store. Danny,
what's... Dick and Marty shirt.
You know, I don't want CES to be like that. Like, just have a separate sex con, you know, sex tech con.
No. This is the consumer electronics show, and there's a lot of consumers out there in sex tech. Man. And hey, that's fine. Just have a red light district of the Consumer Electronics Show that once you walk into the place, that's nothing but dark colors and red glow. Like, just know you're in the sex toy section. Kids, get out, right? have a bouncer there. It's fine.
Yeah, like,
they deserve a place because, you know, there's some, oddly enough, some really weird and cool innovation taking place in sex tech.
It's like the wish.com section of CES. I came here to look at the new cell phone tech. Why are you shoving anal plugs in my face?
I mean, you know, we talk about how the economic driver of space travel is you know, actual commercial
porn
space
has,
travel.
Porn has been an economic driver in tech for a long time.
The economic driver of actual artificial general intelligence and robots is fuckables, right? It is 100% sex robots. So,
oh God,
that's where we're at. This is they deserve their place, and I'm glad they got back this year.
We deserve whatever Mother Nature throws at us.
All right. Well, I know
game news. Yeah.
Xbox.
Xbox released Series X. Some news. I got upset. We talked about it a little bit before we started recording. I got upset because somebody, I think from IGN, put a headline up. Xbox Series X not to have any exclusive games for the first year. So it makes you think, like, you know, and then instantly you have Sony saying, you know, Sony's going to have exclusives on day one. Well, Xbox isn't just going to have, they're going to have their exclusive development titles. They're just not going to only release it for the next gen console, just as they did with Xbox One. Things still released for 360, so you could have bought the 360 version of Destiny, or you could have bought the Xbox One version of Destiny. You could still play together. They didn't want to lock out a large portion of the video game buying audience because they couldn't afford the next-gen system on day one, which to me should be commended. But instead, you got some fucking Sony fanboy at IGN wanting to take Xbox down a peg and writes another, what we've talked about on the show, a widely misleading headline. Because they know people are only going to read the headlines, and every Sony jagoff was just sharing that article left and right, like, ha ha ha, get your games up, Xbox, you suck.
Yeah, we talked about it in previous episodes when Series X was first announced, that I think they've got like 15 game studios that they've purchased since Xbox One that are now under the umbrella of Microsoft and that are working on exclusive titles. So they will have a pretty good rollout plan. But yeah, like you said, they're just not saying fuck you to guys like me who I'm not going to buy one for until they're on sale significantly. So I'm going to be living on that Xbox One. And if I want one of those titles, then I'm glad they're still not phasing me out on day one.
Yeah, like I said, they should actually be commended for not following like the Apple model and the other models of like, if you want this game, guess what? You're going to have to drop $500 on new systems, sell more systems, let's sell more systems. Like, no, they're doing things for the sake of their customer base, and they're looking out for their customer base, which should be commended.
Yeah.
You know, another system, they got the Razer.
The Razer Kishi.
Their own handheld. It is literally a knockoff Switch.
Oh, yeah. You got to be pissed if you're Nintendo.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
It looks just like a Switch, but it's PC. It's a PC-based Switch. You can play any PC games on it. It runs off of Intel processors and a regular like PC-type RAM. It will work with like Stadia. It will work with any PC gaming type thing.
If you can get Stadia.
If Stadia's still around. but either way, it's a portable PC gaming system, which actually looks really great. And people who got their hands on it said like they're not announcing like price points yet for this. And they're not saying that it's like that this is something purchasable now. But everybody said they picked it up. This is a polished thing. Like, it is ready for launch. So maybe this is something you're going to see by Christmas time, by, you know, summertime for you portable gamers. Because why wouldn't you love this?
Another thing that I heard about Xbox, I don't know if it's a confirmed rumor or not, but they said the Series X is going to support Steam games.
No, I haven't heard that.
So Xbox, I think, is really trying to, like we've said in the past with their Game Pass, and they're really trying to tackle into the PC market. I think the PC audience and gamers have long been their own kind of like subgenre, and I think they're trying to bring them into the main target audience with, you know, everybody else.
So, you know, not big news coming out of gaming per se for this CES, but definitely some some of those devices coming out. Something that's kind of gaming adjacent is you see a lot of these displays. CES is always full of new TVs, new PC monitors, whatever else. And you know, they're 8K everywhere. When you look at the CES, every TV is 8K. Some of them are touting saying, you know, they're going to achieve 8K and 300 kilohertz. As far as
that's what I care about. I care about refresh rate, frame rate, as opposed to color scale. You know, 8K refers to color scale. The hertz is what refers to frame rate, and I think that people should be focusing on frame rate as opposed to color scale.
Yeah, absolutely, and they're looking at having different monitors that are doing that. So they were displaying the capability of that. Those were kind of in pretty crazy high price ranges, you know, and you can get a 4K TV nowadays for $300. It's probably hard to spend $2,500 on an 8K 300K TV. Some people are going to do it. Same thing with a bunch of PC.
Some people are going to space for 250 grand. So whatever floats your boat, motherfucker.
So there was one TV that was, I'll just say it, interesting choice. And it was a TV that it came on an actual like mount that has to, you can't mount it on a wall because the mount is a part of it and has a motor in it. So the TV can spin to be landscape mode or portrait mode. So that way, if you're streaming stuff from your cell phone or you're watching videos that filmed in portrait mode, that the TV will automatically sense when the aspect ratio of what you're watching has changed, and it will rotate to be vertical or horizontal.
They literally made a 5,000 TV for every fucking dumbass that doesn't know how to take video in out of portrait mode.
Yeah, like who the fuck is watching your Snapchat on your TV? Like, put your fucking phone down. Just stop.
I took this video of my daughter, but I didn't turn my phone sideways, and I want to show the family on my television. What am I to do? Like, buy this oscillating fucking $5,000 TV?
Yeah, that.
No, turn your fucking phone, Brenda. Turn your fucking phone to the side.
Never. Brenda will never do it. We've got to cater to the Brendas and whatever company. I don't remember even who put that TV together, but they'll sell five of them. But yeah, I mean,
the TV I seen was one that goes from flat screen to curved. So that's where I thought you were going with it. I seen a TV that you put up on your wall, and with one button, it'll go from completely flat to one of those curved TVs.
Oh, really?
Which, I mean, I guess there's a benefit for it.
Sure.
If the market needs it, it'll let you know.
Just like they had rolling TVs that can like go, like a projector screen, roll out and roll up. Sure. I guess some people need that. I don't know. But yeah, there's not a ton of new tech coming from TVs themselves, but just that, you know, the picture is going to get richer, refresh rates are getting faster. Vizio, you know, cheap ass Walmart brand type Vizio TVs, they displayed an OLED display TV, which is a big deal because they're the cheap asses. And if they're making OLEDs now, then now you could probably get one for less than $2,000.
Well, that was going to be my next question is, are you even 4K yet?
No, I'm not 1080p yet.
That's what I'm saying. We're sitting here on a show talking about oscillating curved TVs, and this motherfucker's still 720.
They might.
Go to Walmart, man. Come on. If this isn't an ad for our Patreon page, I don't know what it is. The other asshole on the mic is literally watching 720p streaming services.
Hey,
can we get a brother in 4K? It's like $300.
there was a moment in like the last 2 weeks that my TV just completely froze and wouldn't shut off, wouldn't do anything, and I was like, oh, this is my moment. I now get to go get a new TV. this thing is dead. Now it refreshed itself. It's fine.
I'm gonna get your son an indoor like golf set, just so he just starts whacking golf balls around a house, and hopefully he shatters that motherfucker. I mean, I got them the 1S just so like you could stream 4K Netflix. It's not like you don't have a 4K player. You got to foot you like I. You have every piece but the monitor.
Yeah, yeah. Fact. Let's move on from my cheap ass to. I guess really the only other things that I found were kind of impressive were they last year was all these foldable cell phones, which I don't know why. I guess I just don't know why anybody wants a foldable cell phone. These foldable screen cell phones. I guess it's a cool concept, but I don't need it. I don't know anybody who needs that in their life. But this year, foldable cell phones weren't really that big of a deal, but foldable tablets were. And I think foldable tablets are interesting because tablets are big, they're bulky, they're harder to
store.
Makes
it easier to put in
safe.
A diaper bag and yeah. take.
if I can take a whatever size, 10-inch tablet or whatever else, and I can fold that to be in half, that's pretty well protected, that's pretty durable. It makes the tablet less cumbersome to bring around. I don't carry a very big Merce around with me, so to carry around a tablet would be kind of a pain in the ass. So if you can cut that in half, I think that's actually desirable foldable screens.
Yeah, sure. I like when I first seen the tech of like the refrigerators with the tablet screen on the door and the cameras inside and everything, I was like, who needs any of this shit? And then I had a customer that had one, and not gonna lie, I want it because it hooks up to their Wi-Fi. Those cameras go to your phone. If you're at the grocery store and you can't remember if you got ketchup, mayonnaise, butter, or whatever, you just look right into your shelves. You just look right into your shelves. Like, nope, don't have butter. Grabbing this butter right now. Like, instantly, the minute I seen like that function, I was like, okay, now I need it. That's fine. Now I need it. So as of right now, I don't see why I would need one, but somebody balling out more than me, go ahead and buy it and then bring it to my face and be like, hey, you know what I use it for? I do this with it, and be like, okay, now I need it. Like, now I know I need it.
Yeah, other than that, the only other one from CES that I found particularly interesting was there's this company, Neon, which even before CES, they were getting hyped. They had like this artificial intelligence kind of software that they were just talking about, like, this is the future of artificial intelligence, that like conversational artificial intelligence, actual like emotional learning artificial intelligence that you can chat with and they will kind of go back and forth with you. In the end, they just kind of flopped. It was not ready to be displayed at CES. The hype was way more than what they could kind of deliver on. They had a bunch of images of the avatars of the type of AI people that you could talk to and videos of it. But the videos they were showing were of the actors who the AI was modeled after. So then in actual execution at CES, people were expecting these like extremely photorealistic people, AI the avatars.
Is this the Sanjay Gupta thing I seen?
No, I don't think he was involved. I never saw it, but in the end, this company flopped. They tried to display that these conversational AIs, and the reason why I was interested, because I did hear about it beforehand. I was interested in it because I just listened to like a podcast with the artificial intelligence podcast where they interviewed the guy who's the head of Amazon's Alexa division. And he was just talking about, the challenges of making like actual conversational AI. And you could do that with like an Alexa now. You can ask it to have a chat with you and it'll pretty much tell you like, okay, I will do this, but I'm going to be recording this and we're going to send this back as feedback because they're trying to develop this conversational ability, kind of like emotional intelligence through the Alexa app. And he's just talking about the challenges of it. And this company's saying they could do it. Nope, you failed. You did not display well at CES. So still not there yet, but it's something people are still trying to do pretty hard.
Yeah, your stock price just went down.
But overall, I guess it was still a fairly impressive display. It just fell far short from what they announced they could be capable of at this point. All right, well, you got any last kind of add-ons here for CES before we move on?
No, that's it for CES for me. We do have a couple or other tech stories to get out that I wanted to talk about before we wrap up the show.
All right. One that I know got you quite heated was this. So we talked about it, and it was probably about 3 weeks ago or so. We were talking about the hacking, Ring cameras getting hacked. Some person was telling like an 8-year-old kid to kill themselves. And
told him Santa wasn't real.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff through the Ring camera. And you shared the article with me about the follow-up to that.
Yeah, so even 3 weeks ago when we did that, we talked about how it's not really Ring's network's fault. It's your shitty password, you know, that is your Yorkie's name plus your daughter's birthday that is easy for anybody that has access to your Facebook page to fucking figure out. Once they hack your login, they have access to your cameras and they can wreak havoc on your network. So, you know, as then we kind of pointed out that the article is misleading, that it's not really Ring's fault. It's more of a weak link in the human chain. This story just came out this week that two of the people that got hacked for the Ring cameras are suing Ring as if they weren't the flaw in the system, as if Ring was the flaw in the system. And reading the article, they're suing for negligence and one other legal jargon term. But they're saying because Ring doesn't force them to have two-factor authentication, and because Ring doesn't monitor if foreign IP addresses, you live in Illinois and a California IP address logs in your account, they don't send you an email. They say because they don't do that, that they are totally negligent for this hack and owe them tens of millions of dollars, which fuck you, pal. Like, fuck you. Like, right. you were the dummy. Make a better password. Like, should Ring have two-factor authentication? Yes, they should. It's not that hard to do, you know, but as we said 3 weeks ago, it's already hard enough to set up these devices. I'm an electrician. I install these things for people, and according to my job description, once I hook up the wires and mount the light or the doorbell, I should just go home, and you should be the one scanning the barcode and entering everything into your app. I end up doing that for people because they can't figure it the fuck out. So I don't leave the job until your shit's all completely set up, and then I leave. If they put two-factor authentication and some of these things in, it's just making, you know, me have to do more because these homeowners, they can't fucking figure it out.
Yeah, so I would say sue them. Ring is owned by Amazon. Fuck Amazon. Sue Amazon. Good with it. But in the end, I think that this lawsuit is not
it's frivolous.
It's a bit frivolous. But what it's going to do is hopefully just... Ring does need to step up the security game. All these smart home things do need to step up their security game. There does need to be some level of end-to-end authentication, end-to-end actual support where things outside of what are the trusted devices within should not be able to go and then work their way into Ring. Even if
consumers,
they get into your
also
network.
Need to become more aware of how tech works and how these things work also.
No.
I have a large customer base. You would be shocked as to how many people still have AOL email addresses.
I'm not shocked at all. Like, this is why I say, God knows, like, it is too much with, especially how fast tech changes, and like to say that everybody needs to be completely, you know, able to understand tech.
If you want to make your fucking home a smart home, at least know a little bit about what a fucking smart home entails.
They know how to log in, and they know how to check their camera. The security is a part that I think that should be trusted to the company to some degree. You should be able to trust that these major companies are doing that.
Ring issues you a password, and you have to use that password. And if you lose that fucking password, you're gonna have to call in, and Ring is gonna have to give you a new one, and they're probably gonna give you a surcharge for it because now you're using customer service, and it's costing them $5 million a year to have fucking 50 motherfuckers in Bangladesh reset your goddamn password every fucking day.
Or simple things like in order to add new users or new devices or anything outside of the trusted, what's already trusted in your NN certification, anything outside of that requires two-factor authentication.
I mean, as a small business owner and electrician, all it does is give me more work because no consumer is going to know how to do it. They're going to call to a professional to fucking do it, and my phone's going to ring more, and I'm going to make more money. I'm looking at this from a consumer standpoint, and like, it's going to drive up cost of product. If you want these things because you're too lazy to come up with a unhackable password, then you're going to have to pay more. It's going to affect profit. It's going to affect margins.
There's no such thing as an unhackable password. It's just most of the time it's not worth hacking. It's not, you know, the average person doesn't have anything that's worth them putting in the effort. But every password is hackable. So it's just a matter of time. And as computers process faster, as things like, we are going to get to a point where passwords are largely insignificant because the ability to compute your way through password combinations are going to be so easy. Like there has to be forward leaning thought into how to actually make it still kind of the user interface, the usability, the general lowest common denominator consumer is capable of using these things. But we have new approaches and we have more intricate approaches like two-factor authentication as the standard, and the companies need to do it. To say the consumers are going to do it is foolish. Do I think they're going to win this lawsuit? Absolutely not. Do I think Ring and smart devices and stuff in general need to do more? Absolutely, I do.
Okay, that's not a reason to sue someone for tens of millions of dollars because
yeah, but until they get sued, they don't care.
You suck because you suck.
Yeah, but until they get sued, they don't care. So this is how it's going to drive the change. Cool, you know, sue McDonald's because you burn yourself a coffee. So that way,
Don't get me started on that. There's an HBO documentary on that. That lady should have sued McDonald's, and she should have got every fucking penny she got. Like, McDonald's totally was at fault. I've watched that documentary twice. It's called Hot Coffee. It's on HBO. It's all about tort reform. If you haven't seen it, watch it.
I haven't seen it, but
I'm telling you right now, just the fact that it's been 20 years and people are still referencing that case as a reason why we shouldn't frivolously sue people, that was a propaganda campaign.
Yeah, but I'm
on
saying
McDonald's.
That's why we should. I've never seen the documentary, but I'm saying we should. Like, this is how you get companies to pay attention to individual cases that have mass effect. Sometimes you just need to do these lawsuits because it causes publicity, it causes issues, the settlement, you know, the settlement money's not a big deal, the publicity is. And you do these lawsuits to put it in the public eye, to show the companies that consumers care about certain things, and then it forces them to actually take some level of action. So while I think they shouldn't win this lawsuit, I think it is their fault. I think hopefully it pokes Ring and Amazon in the eye enough to where they go ahead and try to figure it out.
We got to come up as a society then with a better way. We do live in a day and age where social media campaigns get a lot done, you know. But if we rely on lawsuits like this to drive consumer regulation or whatever you want to call it, it jams up our court system. It's the reason why lawyers make so much fucking money. It's not good. Our judicial system should not be used to focus group better consumer products.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know, a scathing Amazon review or you writing in an editorial.
5,000 scathing Amazon reviews have power. Like, I can't tell you how many people I know. The minute they start writing, you know, horrible reviews on people's Facebook pages, get free gift cards and coupons mailed to their houses. Like, it does have some kind of power. I'm just saying that if we just rely on lawsuits to be the driver for companies to make better products, that's not. My tax dollars pay for that judge. I don't fuck your Ring camera.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm not for necessarily them winning this lawsuit, or even necessarily the lawsuit itself, but I am for change in the smart home industry and all these smart devices, that security needs to be put higher as a priority. So maybe it drives change, maybe it doesn't. Either way, this episode's gone on long enough here, I think. So,
well, the one thing I did want to touch on that we mentioned last week, that we could end on if you want, was that Instagram model.
Oh yeah.
so we do talk about Instagram bans and Facebook, you know, the shadow bans and things like that. So last week we had talked about a Instagram model who was sending nudes to anybody that donated at least $10 to the Australian wildfires. And it started out, she raised a couple grand, blah, blah, blah. By the time we did the recording, she was up to $100,000 raised for the Australian wildfires and sent out tons of nudes to thirsty philanthropists. And turns out she actually got up to 500 grand. So she raised $500,000 for the Australian wildfires. And Instagram in turn said, fuck you, get off our platform. To me, again, this is them not having any kind of care for context or looking at things case by case. This is just, you were profiting off of our platform by doing things that we don't fully support. We didn't get a cut of that 500 G's. Today it was selling nudes for Australia. Tomorrow it'll be selling nudes for your groceries. And we don't fucking want that. So get the fuck off our platform. And they banned her.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things. I don't know what the rules of Instagram are. I don't know what there. This is, you know, we're still a weird society where we, for whatever reason, look so negatively on porn and I mean her name on Instagram was the Naked Philanthropist. This is what she changed it to. So I mean this was what she was attempting to do there. Either way, she raised some real money and. You know, and maybe give her a warning, Instagram. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. A slap on the wrist, like a couple days, and be like, look, you know, you did a good thing. We're going to ban your account for a week. You know, here's why. So it doesn't happen again. But good job for doing it. We're going to match your donations to Australia. So we're going to ban you for a week, but we're also going to donate $500,000 to Australia and make it a cool million. But when you come back, please adhere to our rules. Is that fucking hard to do?
Yeah.
Like, is that fucking hard to do? No. Hammer ban. Boom. Ban hammer. Like, just like, and then that's my frustration with this is like, okay, I get it. You had the ability to ban her, but should you though?
Yeah.
Like, should you?
But anyway, I feel for her.
And we're all just cogs in the wheel. But we're all just cogs in the wheel. Fuck you. You're just a cog. We don't need you.
She tweeted that. I'm gonna quote her. She put that my Instagram got deactivated. My family disowned me, and the guy I like won't talk to me, all because of that tweet. But fuck it. Save the koalas.
Awesome. Man, mad love. Mad love. Big ups, girl.
Fuck them all. If everybody's really going to be that upset.
And that's you another money, horrible you aspect body, of this, too, is cool. She got slut-shamed like crazy for this. Like, I mean.
Yeah. But we can celebrate.
Karen could put cutlets in her bra and push up her boobs when she goes to work to try to get a fucking raise. But goddamn, if this girl sends a private picture to
your celebrated activist actress can get naked on screen in front of millions of people.
Yeah, or you know, Pam Anderson gets butt naked and says, you know, down with fur for PETA, and she's applauded and loved for it. But this chick raises $500,000 fucking dollars
to save
koalas and kangaroos, and she deserved to be slut shamed and banned. Like,
yeah, we're a weird society. But this is how we handle.
It takes boobs to save the planet, man. That's what it's going to take.
All right. Well, I think that's it then for the episode here, and. Yeah, thanks for listening to episode 58 of the Nerd Cantina Show. You can find the articles and things that we discussed here over at thenerdcantina.com/show58.
And as always, join us at the closed Facebook group at thenerdcantina.com/community. We always have a lot of fun in there. It's constantly growing. We get a few new members each week that add their little spice of life to the memes and contributions. So we have a good time in there. And as we stated earlier in the show, we have the Patreon page. If you like what we're doing, if you want to help support us and get Ken into at least 1080p for as little as a dollar, you can donate a dollar a month, $12 a year. You get some exclusive content. If you look on your on your podcast player. You'll see that the exclusive Joker episode's up on your podcast player now. You can give that a listen and see what we're trying to offer those exclusive Patreon customers. And support what we're doing here. We got convention season coming up. I just bought us some business cards and things like that to try to get our show out there. So every dollar goes to making the show better, to helping us get out there. So if you like what we're doing, as little as $12 a year, you can support these two dumbasses and their show.
All right. Well, with that said, thanks again, nerds. Talk to you next week.
See ya.